This is Batman. Comic Timing is a proud member of the Comics Podcast Network. It's what it does, because I'm Batman.
Welcome to episode 36, part 3 of Comic Timing, a comics podcast devoted to the average comic book fan from the average comic book fan. Join in as a rotating panel of guests and myself, Ian Levinstein, discuss whatever comes to mind, time after time, here on Comic Timing. Well, finally, our episode 36 extravaganza comes to a close as the second half of our Steve Bryan interview is here for everybody. We discuss Athena Voltaire and even some Frank Miller and other topics along the way because nothing is a straight line with Steve Bryan, and that's what we love about him. Here now, Comic Timing. Now, let's actually go specifically to Athena Voltaire here, because I realize we've gone general up until now, and I want to obviously get to the nitty-gritty of the book. First of all, let's let you describe to the people out there what Athena Voltaire is all about.
1930s pulp action, Indiana Jones starring a James Cameron-style female pilot. That's the nutshell high concept.
That's the best way to describe her, actually. I'm glad you mentioned that, actually. James Cameron-style heroine. That works. I hadn't really thought of James Cameron before. But now that you're mentioning it, yes, that works.
I mean, Cameron or Whedon, it's a fine line. I want to draw sexy women, but by the same token, I want to draw handsome men. You know, we'll say attractive women and attractive men, or sexy women and sexy men. I like the Hollywood ideals. I mean, if the book takes place in the 30s, I don't mind the lead characters all having attractive qualities, but by the same token, I don't want to be exploitative. I don't want to, you know, have every issue have, you know, our heroine run off to take a bath, because, you know, we need to have tendrils of steam, you know, covering the naughty bits. I don't see any point for that kind of book, but I like to draw pretty people of both genders. So it's really important to me to do the James Cameron, Joss Whedon thing, because I want to do tough characters, you know, compelling characters. And I totally lost my train of thought, so please shut me up.
So what you're saying is we won't see the Athena Voltaire swimsuit special anytime soon?
Only if, like, Daly clubs me over the head and draws it himself.
Which actually would be a very amusing sight, I must say.
What, Daly clubbing me over the head?
Oh, yeah, why not? Sure.
Thanks a lot, Ian. Jeez.
Oh, come on, man. No. Let's see it drawn, not actually happen in real life, all right?
Because okay.
That would hurt. That would very much hurt, yes. And in general, what I like about the book is that it feels like I'm reading a movie, if that makes any sense. You know, it's very cinematic, and it feels literally like a female Indiana Jones, but not in the Tomb Raider sense, in the action sense. And that's really what hooked me about Athena Voltaire in the first place.
Well, thank you. I don't know which part to address first. The female Indiana Jones thing. It was really important that we did it Indiana Jones in terms of that sense of epic adventure, but not so much in terms of making it parallel to Indy.
Yeah.
You know, there was no need to do another archaeologist because, yeah, you already have Tomb Raider and stuff like that. And comics have a long history of aviatrices, female aviators. You know, you had Valkyrie in the Airboy comics. There was a strip, Flying Jenny. Diana Palmer in The Phantom was a pilot. You had a lot of that kind of stuff.
Blackhawk.
Yeah, Lady Blackhawk, another great choice. So, I mean, there was a lot of that sort of thing, so it just seemed kind of a natural hook. Of course, I really suck at drawing planes, so, you know, I kind of backed myself into a corner with that. But in terms of trying to get that movie feel, that's kind of a two-part thing. Suddenly, I'm the podcasting name dropper. I was emailing back and forth with Tom Caters of Around Comics. And Tom sent me just a really nice email pointing out what he really liked about the issue, and we talked back and forth. And he had mentioned that the panels were, you know, I don't think he used the word widescreen, but he said, you know, those kinds of shots, but there was enough in the panel to make the eye keep on moving. And from the beginning, I've always thought that we should try to make the locales the most important supporting character, because what good is a globe-trotting adventure if you're not going to see an epic scope of Machu Picchu or, you know, Abu Simbel or something like that.
Yeah.
And I'm really fortunate that Chad Fidler, who colored the webcomics and did the first issue of the miniseries, and Jason Millay, who's you know, jumped in for the last three issues of this series and is doing the next series. Both of those guys are just so good with doing like painterly look and color that they make me look a lot better than I really am, and I'm really grateful for that from them.
Oh, well, I doubt that that's a lot better than you really are, man. It's just,
no,
it's
seriously. Those guys add so much depth to what I do. It's really cool to have collaborators that push it even further. Mm-hmm. So I love it.
Cool, definitely. Brent, I know that you've only really read the preview online, but what have you thought so far?
I read the preview, I guess it was last night, and I thought it was definitely strong. I mean, I can't say I haven't picked up anything, but Rick Veitch. Or not Rick Veitch, Butch Geiss on Ruse and CrossGen, and like a Steve Epting kind of feel with your art, just the way the shadows are like, I don't know, I guess more or less real life and not really like highlights of the people, you know? I really like that. And I thought the ancient city or whatever that was with the aliens or whatever, the underneath the earth, that was really cool.
Oh, thank you. Well, first of all, I got to tell you, Steve Epting and Butch Geiss are two of my favorite guys out there right now. So, I mean, that's a huge compliment, simply because, like, when Geiss started doing Birds of Prey, I thought he was totally channeling Al Williamson, who's one of my favorite guys. And Epting is another one of those guys that I see a lot of Al Williamson in his stuff, so thank you. After Ian put you on the spot, thank you for, you know, pulling out those two guys, because they're you know, two of my favorite guys working today.
You said the right people. Congratulations, Brent.
What did he win, Ian?
You have won a brand new Skype.
Yay.
Yes, all you have to do is update, and it'll show up the next time that they release a new one. It's absolutely free.
All right.
Yeah, yeah.
What a bargain.
Yeah, you also...
No, but I mean, I was reading... I was sorry.
No, I was just going to say, you also received a half-used toothpaste bottle, compliments of Crest.
No, but I was reading Ruse, and that was one of the favorite series of mine when I was reading those compendiums over winter break, and then I read... I saw the pages and stuff, actually, instead of just, like, the little banner on the bottom of your signature, and it just instantly popped in my mind, so it was something I got really strongly from it. So I'm not just saying that to butter you up.
Well, regardless, thank you, because, I loved Ruse. I thought that was a wonderful series with Butch Geiss, and Mike Perkins was inking him. And Perkins is the guy that's doing, he's
Union
alternating
Jack.
With Steve Epting on Cap. And, yeah, he did Union Jack, which I just thought was a great series.
Yeah. I'll have to pick that up and trade, actually. I had wanted to, but then I realized that was a bit short on Moolah. So I'll have to pick that one up when it comes out in trade. Is it out in trade yet, or is it getting the trade? I forget.
I don't think it's in trade yet. It's a great story, too. Christos Gage, who is doing Stormwatch PhD.
Yeah.
Did that. It's just a wonderful story. I can't recommend it highly enough.
Oh, cool. Awesome. Well, now that I hear that Christos is doing it, I'm on. So
he's fantastic.
You said the right words, yeah. Because he's been one of those. I recently discovered him, and I'm liking it. I'm liking what I've seen so far out of him. So no question on that. It takes a special type of artist to draw Nazis awesome.
Where the hell does that come from?
Dude, no, hear me out here, okay? Because oftentimes there's too much of a menace to them. You know, like, they make them seem like devilish creatures, as it were. You know, like, too much shading, too much dark to them. But you draw them just like villains. You know, just like a regular, you know, villainous, like, real person. And... you know, I like that. I like that approach to it. You know, as opposed to making them seem like they're extra natural in any sort of sense, like they're some sort of devilish, you know, evilish person. You're not really going for that approach with what you draw. And was that an approach you took specifically, or am I just throwing this out of my ass?
Well, I never really thought about it a whole lot. I mean, one of the lead Germans in the book does have, you know, the scar across the eye and stuff like that. But
yeah.
So much of the way I would like to see the book look is from that naturalistic Al Williamson school of drawing. So I never really thought about doing a whole lot of exaggerating.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, the other thing, avoiding spoilers here, though, you know, not every German was a Nazi.
Yeah.
So I don't know where to go. I've derailed myself. So I'll just say thank you.
You're welcome. Hey, well, I started off kind of weird in general with, oh, yeah, no, you draw awesome Nazis, yeah. the Jew saying you draw awesome Nazis is a lovely way to start things there. I guess I'm a self-hating Jew. I don't know, but
I'm seeing another pull quote to go with the Marvel Zombies one.
Oh yeah,
Steve Bryant draws awesome looking Nazis.
Oh yeah, and his gorilla werewolves with jetpacks are absolutely brilliant.
Gorilla werewolves. Ooh, you had a new twist.
Exactly. See, we're building upon it as the interview goes on. So
your ideas intrigue me, and I'd like to subscribe to your newsletter.
You can do so over at speakgeekspeak.com/. Okay, yeah. It's a spoken word newsletter, oddly enough. So I call it Round Comics. It's really good. Yeah. Where do you draw your inspiration specifically from? What you're drawing in Athena Voltaire? I know that you said you know who your art inspirations are in general, but is there any specific previous art from comics that you draw from with your style?
Any previous what?
Any previous art, you know, that's done like aviation, that sort of thing. Any specific art that you draw your inspiration from comic-wise?
In terms of like particular artists?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, here we go. I've dropped the name Al Williamson a bunch of times. I know that to a lot of people he's most known for inking John Romita Jr. on Daredevil, but Williamson did the Star Wars Daily Strip for like 3 years.
Uh-huh.
He did Secret Agent X9 before that in syndication for like 13 years, from like 67 to 1980. He was one of the ECR artists, did a bunch of stuff for Warren in like Creepy and Eerie and stuff like that. So he is like one of the top guys, just one of my absolute heroes. Mark Schultz, who does Xenozoic Tales, Dave Stevens of The Rocketeer, Steve Rude, Paul DeLacy. His Master of Kung Fu stuff to me, you know, you talk about the Moody Shadows, he's on there. Steve Epting, Butch Geis, Tim Bradstreet. Tim's one of the people that taught me how to ink.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he's been just a huge influence. Mike Mignola, just the way Mignola puts black on a page is just so fucking inspiring. I'm serious. Oh, it's just so beautiful. Yeah, talking about putting black on a page, Alex Toth. Milton Caniff, I'm so excited that IDW is going to be doing Terry and the Pirates. I loved his Steve Canyon stuff.
Oh, okay.
Which Checker's been putting out. A guy I hated when I was growing up was Frank Robbins. He used to do The Invaders and did some terrible Cap stuff. He co-created Man-Bat, incidentally.
Uh-huh.
But he's a guy that shouldn't have drawn superheroes, but his newspaper strips from the 50s, Johnny Hazard, it's just beautiful stuff. There's so much old strip stuff that I'm discovering. Noel Sickles, Alex Raymond, Hal Foster, you know, all that stuff. I mean, just tons of inspiration from the past and the present, you know?
Yeah. And I had to let you go on your art quest there at least once during the episode, so.
Oh, and the thing is, I'm going, oh, I left out Wally Wood. And, and you know, like in 5 minutes I'm going to go, and Mark Buckingham, you know, and just stuff like that. There's so many people that just kick my ass that it's exciting.
And again, you know, not to stick my head up your ass or anything like that, but what I like about your art is that it is very unique in its style. Even if you do draw your inspirations, it does. I can't say, oh, that looks just like such and so. You know, you do have a very unique style that I am enjoying in the book, and it makes me think. You know, like I'm thinking in my head, like superhero stuff. Yeah, I could see that. I'd actually really like to see you on a superhero book at one point, just to see, you know, how you're able to adapt it, as it were.
Well,
and I'm sure you would like that, too, at one point.
Well, first of all, thanks.
You're welcome.
This isn't like false modesty or anything, but I really do just see the flaws. I see the areas where I'm like, I know I'm trying to do something that, like, one of my heroes did. And, you know, my line doesn't look right to me. So I just see stuff like that. So, you know, thanks for saying that. And it's weird because when I first tried to break in, the guys that were doing the majority of the superhero things, I don't think my mentality was appropriate for it.
Mm-hmm.
With the way that I like to do stuff.
But
you know, now you've got everybody that came out of CrossGen is kind of redefining some of the stuff that Marvel does, you know, with like Epting and stuff like that. So I think it'd be cool to try a superhero thing, but it would have to be the right one. Again, I've run off the track.
Well,
stop me before I keep talking, please.
You've actually led me to one of the questions I asked last time around in the interview that is lost forever in time. I'd like to ask this time, and Brent, I want your opinion on this also. I want to ask you first, Brent, and then I'll ask you, Steve. From what you've seen, obviously, you've only seen the preview, but I guess you have enough of an idea of it. What mainstream superhero book do you feel Steve's art would fit?
Oh, man.
Here we go. Putting him on the spot. Here we go.
I guess because of the Epting thing, I could say Captain America, but I'm trying to think. I don't know, maybe Manhunter?
Ooh, okay.
Interesting.
I mean, the art there is good, but with the whole female thing, I'm trying to think. I was trying to think of a female one. Jonah Hex? I don't know.
That'd be cool.
Jonah Hex would be awesome. I would pick that up.
You know, I read mostly DC, so I'm trying to think of stuff.
Well, one that I actually thought of right off the bat was actually, surprisingly enough, Daredevil. And it's not just because of who's been drawing it lately. But I'd like to see, specifically with the way that you use shadow, I'd like to actually see the way how that translates to a book that takes place in Hell's Kitchen. You know, I feel like you'd be able to have a decent enough take on Daredevil to, you know, work on the book. So there's mine in Marvel and DC. How about Mr. Miracle and Big Barda?
Ooh.
Just in particular with that.
I grew up loving Kirby, so that's an interesting take.
Yeah, because... Because I realize that they have a nice mixture of the, you know, the space stuff and the secret agent stuff that they do on occasion, specifically going to the fact that they go undercover often. So I think you'd be able to get that in there.
Now, are you familiar at all with Wally Wood?
Vaguely. I should be a lot more familiar than I am.
Wood was one of the EC guys. He assisted Eisner on the Spirit on the Moon storyline from like 1952.
Uh-huh.
He inked like the best issues of the Challenges of the Unknown,
okay,
over Kirby.
Yeah.
And he inked Kirby on a daily newspaper strip called Sky Masters.
Uh-huh.
Wally Wood begged Carmine Infantino to let him ink Kirby's Fourth World stuff.
Oh, wow.
And they wanted to keep it consistent with the Marvel stuff, so they had like Vince Coletta on those early ones. And I, you know, you say Mr. Miracle, and I'm like, oh, I would try to draw it like Kirby inked by Wood, you know. So I went to my little happy place there. That never occurred to me.
I'm getting your wheels churning now. Look out!
Oh, so that's neat.
Yeah. Well, again, I wanted to think of something that wasn't, you know, quite what most people would think of. But right away, I'm like, yeah, no, that would be a pretty interesting take there. You think of anything else, Brent?
No, I'm trying to think. I don't know. The style's like a little less superhero than Superman and Batman. I'm trying to think of like more.
I think I would suck at both of those. So
you're agreeing
with
me?
Entirely right. No, I'm entirely right, and you're entirely right. I don't think I would do a good job at that.
I'm thinking you might be able to do Batman, but again, I wouldn't put you on either one, tell you the truth, at least not now. You know, possibly somewhere down the line, maybe, but at this point, I'd go more for the lesser known, as it were. The lesser known.
No, I agree.
DC. Yeah. Yeah, let's ask the question to you, Steve. What would you like to tackle?
Who first, Marvel or DC?
Go Marvel first.
The Invaders. I've got a ton of 40s reference, and I would, you know, gladly go out and detail Ed Brubaker's car for a year for a shot at doing that. So, I mean, that's like, you know, the first thing out of my head.
I hope you're listening, Ed.
Shang-Chi, Master of Kung Fu.
Okay.
Because I already told you, you know, Paul Gulacy was it for me.
Yeah.
A Black Widow espionage thing would be really cool.
Mm.
You know, do it with that kind of vibe like the Alias TV show.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Where you hear, you know, techno music. That's the soundtrack to the comic. I think that'd be cool. DC, I don't think I could do it justice, but talking about Kirby, I'd love to draw Commandy.
Okay.
Challenges the Unknown. Yeah, I'm like all the off-the-beaten-track DC stuff. Jonah Hex would be cool. Gosh,
I like that idea of Manhunter. Honestly, I do like that idea, because
I think that'd be neat.
Yeah, specifically with the Manhunter that's now. Obviously, I mean, if you want to go old school Manhunter, you go old school Manhunter. But with the Manhunter that's there now, I could actually I'm imagining it in my head now. Like I'm like morphing your pencils into there, and I'm like that looks very pretty in my mind right now. So
relaunch Gotham Central. I'd love to do that.
Ooh, there you go.
That's like one of my favorite.
What about Checkmate? That's kind of like super agent stuff.
Now, see, do I need to get the first trade of that? Because everybody I know is speaking so highly of it.
Get the first trade. Get the first trade. And again, it's one of those series where you can wait on reading it, but when you do read it, you're happy you did.
Yeah, I got the first five issues and really liked it, but then I got into the Suicide Squad stuff, and I dropped it then.
Yeah.
Because those two issues had no Checkmate in there at all, what I thought.
Yeah, they had a recent crossover with Shadow Pact that was very good. So, I mean, if you're into Shadow Pact, then that might actually be the jump-on issue, because obviously you've got your Shadow Pact and your Checkmate, so that might be a good place to start. But, yeah, try and pick up the first trade if you can, because then you'll know for certain whether or not it's for you. It is one of those ones that sort of, like, you either love it or you don't, and there's really no in-between for it. So you got to try it to know.
Well, I mean, Greg Rucka is just so good.
Oh, yeah.
Incidentally, that's another thing. I don't know how people get a Queen and Country gig, but, you know, I'd love to do that. And I know that's not Marvel or DC, but...
Sure, yeah, yeah.
You know,
well, hey,
Mr. Rucka is really good.
Oh, yeah, period. I mean, Rucka, I'm waiting to see what comes out of 52 and all that, but I would be in a very, very happy place if there's a Montoya series after this.
I'll raise my hand for that one.
Montoya question, I'm in, man. Seriously.
Even if she's not the question, I loved her so much in Gotham Central.
Uh-huh.
I mean, just what a fun book.
Yeah, she got a very good voice of her own in that. You know, before then, she was still very associated with the animated version of her, and she got a very unique voice in there that she didn't really have in the Batbooks before. Yeah, so, that was definitely great stuff. Let's go a little farther into, I guess, the differences between drawing men and women. I wanted to touch on that a little bit before we get close to wrapping it up here.
Okay.
How differently do you have to draw a man than you do a woman? Obviously, I mean, you touched on you don't want to make her look, you know, like super sexy and all that, but I know you like to make your men look good as well. But how differently do you have to draw a man than a woman?
Women are curves, men are right angles.
Uh-huh.
I mean, that's an oversimplification, but, you know, that's part of it. You know, I go back to, like, Steve Rude a lot, because he does these just really idealized men and women where, you know, the women all look gorgeous and the guys are all handsome and everybody is just chiseled without looking lumpy. And I don't know. You know, you just try to find the right mixture of detail. You can put, like, character lines in a guy's face and that gives them a unique quality. But if you're not careful with that in like a woman or a child, you know, with a kid, if you're drawing a kid and you put too many lines in the face, it'll age them so that you look like you've drawn some grotesque little dwarf. And, you know, with a woman, you know, you can add 10, 15 years on there if you're trying to, like, do some rendering around the eye socket. If you're not careful with those brush lines, it, you know, suddenly looks like she's got age lines. So
she's very, very tired.
Yeah, exactly. Like she's had to listen to me for 2 hours, you know, since she starts to look a little dozy. Is dozy a word? I was going for drowsy, but I'm now inventing the language.
It is now.
Okay.
If it wasn't, then it is now. So congratulations.
Wee, it's dozy.
Yeah, it's like it's a combination of a doozy and drowsy.
It's a drowsy doozy.
Yes, exactly.
Probably with Dr. Seuss.
Oh, jeez. Which actually reminds me of that new show that just premiered. For the life of me, I can't think of what the hell it's called. Jack Black's new show, Acceptable TV. There we go. Acceptable TV, which just premiered on VH1. They had a parody of Dr. Seuss, a parody of The Cat in the Hat, where this Cat in the Hat type character is at a psychiatrist because he can't get over the fact that kids have changed, and when he you know goes into their houses on rainy days, they get freaked out and run away. It was very, 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 very weird, and at the same time, I was laughing hysterically the entire time. So, I'm liking the Acceptable TV so far. Just had to go off.
I need to check that out.
Yeah, it's well worth it. It's on VH1. And they show it regularly throughout the weekend, and usually on Fridays, I think they show it a lot. So you can catch it. Again, it's VH1. They show it like every 5 minutes anyway. So
they rerun things on cable. The hell you say?
We now return to a brand new rerun of...
I Love New York.
Oh, God. I Love the 90s. Strikes back, strikes back, strikes back.
Oh, well, you know, Andy Dick's got to have a gig, so...
Oh, sure, yeah.
I hate that
making those things.
Oh, my God. Well, I think we've sort of ran the gambit on this episode. I think we've gone a little bit everywhere. Brett, you got any questions you want to ask before we wrap it up? Or?
Oh, yeah. I wanted to ask, how did you decide on doing Athena Voltaire? Like, what's the genesis of it? Like, you have a guy who writes it, right?
Yeah, okay. And I apologize if anybody's heard the story before, just because I ramble. And then, no, I was doing an instructor show at this place I was teaching at, and I had a piece that I was putting in the show. It was a painting I had done for my business card, and it was like a 1950s retro-looking space babe. And we had to, name the pictures we were putting in the show, and for some reason it popped into my head that I was going to call it Athena Voltaire Space Ranger, because the name made me laugh. And I kept thinking, that's a pretty cool name. So I was thinking, that would be a cool dream comic project, but I'm not so good with inventing tech out of my head. So I thought, well, I can't really do space stuff. What do I like to draw? Well, I like to draw jungles and bizarre-looking temples and big epic action. So I just kind of built it around the kind of stuff I wanted to draw. And Paul Daly was an illustrator that I was working with at the game company I was at. And Paul had written and drawn comics. I had never written anything, so I just kind of called Paul up and gave him the name and said, I think she should be a pilot. And he had a bunch of ideas because he had done a licensed character pitch, and he had created this female pilot that he didn't have a name for or something as one of the supporting characters. So he, threw in some of the history, and we just kind of built it from there. And, it's just a lot of fun stuff. Movies that we loved get thrown into there, comics we loved. It's just us having fun.
And that's the important
question?
Part. That's the important part.
The process of getting it published and stuff, how did you guys figure out how to do that and decide that you actually wanted to publish it?
Pretty much, I had taken my samples around for 6 months to a year, and gone through the various portfolio lines at conventions. This was after Paul and I had talked about doing this, and I was like, "Oh, that's my dream project. I'll do that after I get established." And after about a year of hearing the various, "You use too much photo reference. You don't use enough photo reference. You're 85% there. You're this close. If this were 10 years ago, I could give you work." After hearing all the reasons why I wasn't ready or how close I was to being ready, which, by the way, all those reasons were 100% accurate, I wasn't ready. But after hearing that for so long, I was just like, well, screw it. I probably have a better chance of being remembered instead of being one of the 100 people that this guy saw at a convention that had a Starman sample, if I could kind of align myself with this character. So for a while, I had Athena Voltaire pages as part of a pitch, and there were also my samples. And we couldn't find a print publisher for it, and there was a website starting up called AdventureStrips.com, and they asked us to participate. It just kind of took off from there. We were online for a few years, got an Eisner nomination for Best Digital Comic the first year they had that, and, the Eisner nomination helped us get in with, Speakeasy. Speakeasy was one of the people that were interested in doing the book, and they seemed like the best choice at the time. In retrospect, well, I'm glad we landed at 8. So it was just kind of, we went into publishing it because there wasn't work for us. So, we made up the work ourselves.
Was it a bumpy trail to get to get to Ape once, obviously, Speakeasy went down?
I got a lot of emails when Speakeasy went under. And, a lot of them were from people that we had talked with before that were like, I got a few emails that are like, "How's it going?" And they do the little emoticon of a smiley face, trying to be clever. "How do you think it's going?" My publisher just, went belly up. But the first thing that I did was I resubmitted the Image. Jim Valentino had turned us down way back in the beginning, and then Eric Larson turned us down right after the Eisner nomination. After the Speakeasy thing, I was thinking, well, we sold out within a month. Maybe Image would be interested, but it just didn't grab Mr. Larson, so he turned us down. So we were just kind of seeing who all was sending us emails. I talked with a few, and it really did come down between one other company and Ape. And the email that Brent had sent me pretty much just said, "Look, I don't care if you choose to go with us or not, but I'd love to have you on board here. But even more importantly, I'd just love to see this book continue. To be quite honest, it was that email from Brent and the other people that were in the running. They pretty much had the same idea, which was, you know, we'd love it if you found a home with us, but we just want you guys to find a home. And it was the only people that didn't feel like they were trying to needle me for the choice I had made before.
Yeah.
So it wasn't really all that bumpy. There were two very obvious choices, and, you know, the other publisher that was interested, I still want to do something with someday.
Down the road.
Yeah. Once I can quit my damn day job. It's a telethon. Let's get 10,000 people pre-ordering this damn book, okay?
Woohoo! Hey, well, I'm sure we have at least 7,000 listeners to this. Yeah, sure. Yeah, definitely. Without a doubt.
Awesome.
If I can get to the thousands on this show, I'll be a happy boy. So,
well, I'll do my best to help.
Okay. Works for me.
Oh, I don't know. I feel so bad because, like, every question the brand has asked, I feel like I'm rambling. I'm sorry, man. I feel like I don't have good answers.
Dude, your rambles are
good
answers. Yeah, your rambles are good answers. You're going to have to learn that. When you ramble, you give us good answers.
I feel like I get away from the message. You know, I get away from the point, and I just kind of meander back to it. So thanks for being so patient.
Dude, that's fine. You just explained every episode of Comic Timing.
Pretty much.
We've had this discussion before.
Oh, God. Well, no, the last one, if you get a chance to listen to the last one, it just got released today, our 300 episode, not the 300th, the 300 movie. We go so many different places and somehow end up back on 300. I don't know how the hell it happened, but somehow it's coherent.
Okay, I've got a question for you guys.
Yeah.
You mentioned 300, and maybe this even ties in to the indie creator type of thing. Frank Miller, a number of people that loved the first Dark Knight, when Frank was doing Sin City and doing 300, a lot of those people weren't picking up his material, but were, like, really excited that he was coming back to Batman when he was doing The Dark Knight Strikes Back.
Yeah.
DK2, whatever we're calling it this week. And that led to just a ton of Miller backlash and people hating him again. My question is, does Sin City and 300... I should preface this with, I wasn't very excited to know that he was going back to Batman, because I loved 300 and I loved Sin City and I loved Lance Blastoff when he was doing that at Dark Horse.
Yeah.
Does what he has done as kind of our ambassador to Hollywood, does what he's achieved with Sin City and 300... soften whatever anger people have felt towards him for All-Star Batman and Robin and DK2?
You know, I certainly hope so, because, I mean, he is a great writer, okay? We know this. And every great writer will have a couple of sinkers along the way. You know, it's bound to occur. And the fact that we know that All-Star Batman and Robin's lateness is not just his fault, it's Jim Lee's, and the fact that we know that he was trying to have a very dark and gritty style with All-Star Batman and Robin that a lot of people are not used to seeing with Batman. So that's why, I mean, that's what turned me off to All-Star Batman and Robin in the first place. I'm all fine and good for Marv to be in Sin City, but when Marv is Batman, I'm not going to read the book. But
right.
But what he was trying to do is he was trying to make something a bit more gritty and a bit more, I guess, more dark than we would especially find from The Dark Knight. That's fine. With Dark Knight Strikes Again, I was expecting a sequel to Dark Knight Returns. What I got was him, you know, I guess the best way to put it is that he went in a very different direction than I thought he was going to go. His art was incredibly different because this was a different Frank Miller. He was in a very different part of his life, very different art style. His art style had morphed extremely since that point, and people were expecting more Dark Knight Returns. But that's not where he was. So probably in the scheme of things, him doing a sequel to Dark Knight Returns was probably the worst idea he could have done. Because had he just decided to do another Batman story, done the art on it, that's perfectly fine. But he shouldn't have returned to the Dark Knight Returns universe because it was just too different.
Well, did people respond that way to his work because they hadn't seen him progressing, because they hadn't followed him to the indie stuff?
Yeah, I'd say so. I would certainly say so, because they didn't see his art change.
They just remembered Dark Knight from 15 years ago and felt that Frank must still be the exact same person he was 15
exactly.
years
Exactly, and they remembered him from Daredevil, and they remembered him from all these other stuff that, again, happened so long ago that every artist changes throughout the years. I mean, just think of, for example, here, let's look at Stuart Immonen. Okay, let's look at Stuart Immonen's stuff from Final Night, the Parallax storyline, where the sun goes out. And let's compare that to Next Wave. You've got the same artist, however, you've got a definitely evolved, changed style of art. You know, his art was a bit more muddy in Final Night, and it's a bit more exaggerated or cartoony in Next Wave. However, both works perfectly fine. If you would put the Final Night art on Next Wave, we would have had a completely different product. And that's the same thing that I'm thinking about Frank Miller. You know, that his art changed, and so many people didn't realize it changed, that when, you know, his latest book came out, they were like, this is the same person? What the hell?
I agree 100%, because, yeah, it's just the natural progression. I don't listen to the same bands I did 15 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
Or, you know, necessarily read all the same authors. So, yeah, it struck me as very bizarre to just see the backlash that people had. And he was definitely in a no-win situation. I don't know. What about you, Brent? Did we leave you behind on this? Or has Frank Miller redeemed himself? Or are you like me? Did you think he never needed redeeming?
Well, I came in, the first trade I ever got was Dark Knight Returns. So that blew me away. And then I guess a couple of years after that, Dark Knight 2 came out, and I read it. And I don't know. I kind of liked it. I've only read it once, but, you know, maybe I'll go back and reread it. But I think a lot of people were overhyping it and thinking it was going to be this great masterpiece. But I don't know who it was or what I read, but I heard or read something somewhere that DK2 or whatever isn't so bad if you go back and look at it as a natural progression of, you know, Frank Miller. Dark Knight Returns was very 80s. And if you go back and look at DK2 Strikes Again, it's very 2000s, you know, we have all the internet stuff is there.
Yeah.
It's futuristic, lots of color, lots of splash. And if you look at today's culture, and especially where we are now, as opposed to where the internet was when that came out, I think it's right on topic, you know?
So maybe in a couple of years, it's going to be a little more forgiven and people will be able to judge it on its own merit, you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I mean, people who have lived through the 80s, which is certainly not me, because I was only born in 86.
Oh, you're aging me, man.
Yeah.
Hey, isn't it great that I have somebody on the show who's actually younger than I am?
Oh, fuck you, Ian. You know.
But, I mean, people who have lived through the 80s can read Dark Knight and Watchmen and stuff like that and go, oh, this is a masterpiece, this is just how it was and everything. And this hits on all these different things that happened at the time. Whereas I can't do that. I can only go by what I learned in history class. Whereas
right.
Maybe in 10 years or 15 years, I can read Dark Knight Strikes Again, having lived through the 2000s or whatever, you know, with the internet culture and YouTube and all that. And I can say, oh, he was really, man, he hit this on the mark and he hit that on the mark. And this is kind of like this thing and appreciate it more.
Hey, have you guys read Spider-Man the Rain?
No.
Okay. I'm not going to spoil anything here, but I'd say to me, Spider-Man the Rain was a better sequel to Dark Knight Returns than Dark Knight Strikes Again was, if that makes any sense. I know it's a completely different, completely different creator. It's you know, it's Kari Andrews. However, he's taking a lot of the influences from Dark Knight Returns and using it to his advantage for Spider-Man the Rain. That type of storyline probably would have worked better for a Strikes Again than the actual Strikes Again storyline. And I feel you would have had a lot more happy people had that actually been the case. And even the art was much more Frank Miller than even, at least previous Frank Miller, than Strikes Again was, and you would have had happy people. But Spider-Man the Rain was not Strikes Again. So that's what I'm going to say on that. You know, had you had something that felt a little more Returns, you would have had happier people with Strikes Again, but that's not the way it went. And also, he took certain story points from Returns and completely warped them in Strikes Again. The whole Robin thing with and again, I'm spoiling things here. Let me preface that. But the whole Robin thing with Robin turning out to be the Joker in Strikes Again, in Returns, there was no mention at all of Robin being fired. And yet in Strikes Again, all of a sudden he was. So it seemed like it came out of nowhere, and that's one of the reasons why I did not really appreciate the story for everything it was.
So has he redeemed himself then with 300?
I'd say so.
Because, I mean, for a while he had become a butt of jokes, and I just, you know, a little respect for the man. I mean,
yeah. And again, I mean, this is me being serious here because, again, I joke all the time on the show. You know, I've made jokes and all that, but again, those are jokes. This is me being all serious here. Frank Miller is one of the best creators we've ever had in comics, and that's not going to change. He's going to change. What we have to learn is that he's changing. So there's going to be people out there who like it. There's going to be people out there who don't. If you don't like it, well, then that's fine and dandy. You might like his next thing. Give that a shot.
Well, in many ways, I feel like I don't want to use the word elder statesman because he's not that. But by the same token, he's probably close to the age that Eisner was when he wrote comics and sequential art.
Yeah.
And when Eisner started doing all those shop talk interviews with other creators.
Yeah.
To me, it seems that Miller, especially now with the fact that he's kind of becoming a Hollywood brand, in a lot of ways, I feel like he is kind of our spokesman. He's our ambassador of what comics are about, much in the same way that Eisner was for years.
And compare it to Alan Moore, who is not really embracing the whole movie thing, and yet his work is still being made into movies. However, this is one of the things that we talked about on the 300 episode, that perhaps if Alan Moore were to embrace it a bit more and be a part of the process like Frank Miller is, well, then Alan Moore would be a lot happier with what's going out into movies.
Well, and Miller had the benefit of being flown out, you know, to Robert Rodriguez's studio to see a test. And it wasn't a test. It was day one of shooting. But... you know, Rodriguez used the books as boards, and I don't know that, at least prior to him doing that, that Moore would find himself in that kind of position.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I just, to me, what excites me is seeing Miller doing Sin City or 300 more so than him doing Batman. I would love to see John Byrne go back to the Next Men.
Uh-huh.
I want to see Art Adams go back to Monkey Man and O'Brien. And I'm fine if Mignola never goes to the Marvel or DC universe again and just stays with Hellboy.
Yeah,
I love seeing these guys doing characters where it is their singular voice.
And you're far from the minority here. You're far from the minority. There's a lot of folks out there who would agree with you.
It's just so exciting to me to see the singular voice that these guys have. So I guess I tried to tie it up in a bow to bring it back to indie.
Indie talk. I like Miller as our comic statesman better than Kevin Smith, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Certainly better.
Well,
Kevin Smith tried to do it with Mallrats and stuff, and look how that turned out.
And the fact that that Miller writes comics. Smith writes a comic. You know,
His Green Arrow run was good.
Yes, but just,
and
the fact that Smith seems to be all over the place and Miller at least sticks with what he does, because again, we're never going to see Daredevil Bullseye Target. That's dead in the water. But the first issue came out. We're never going to see that again. That's not the sort of face we need for comics. So I'm all for a Frank Miller over a Kevin Smith.
Now, see, I like and respect Kevin Smith, but the thing that Miller has that makes him so exciting is he's not a comics writer. He's a comics auteur. You know, his Sin City stuff was entirely done by him, right down to the lettering. And to me, that's exciting that this guy can do everything. That he can sit down and this afternoon he'll give you a comic.
Yep.
That's pretty cool. That's really cool. And I'm really hoping that the spirit just kicks us all right, you know, in the gut.
Just as I'm hoping that Watchmen kicks us in the butt, but
Well, and here's something else, my question, talking about, you know, Mr. Miller's career. Now that Sin City is a success and 300 is a success, Ronin has been optioned, his DC series.
Yeah.
Will that be branded as Frank Miller's Ronin? Is he now a Hollywood brand?
I'd say so. Yeah, I'd certainly say so.
That's pretty damn cool.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, once you make $70 million in a weekend, you're a brand.
And, again, to me, that's just really exciting as somebody that owns a creator-owned comic, that here's this movie by an unheralded director of a property that's not a known brand. It's a period piece, so those generally tend to be expensive, but, you know, filming against the green screen, it wasn't. and it had no known stars, and it was successful. You know, I don't do comics to try to get a movie deal, but, you know, let's go back to the thought that Steve hates his day job. You know, a movie deal can, you know, eliminate the need for a day job for me or Dave Wachter or whoever, you know?
Yeah.
So seeing 300, you know, keep the string of good comic movies going, I think gives indie creators everywhere a lot of hope. So
yeah, well,
that's that little ramble.
And going on to the other side of things a little bit, just going with the indies here, how about Wanted by Mark Miller? And where that's gone as a movie. I mean, you're going to have stars in this, like Angelina Jolie, Morgan Freeman, and James McAvoy. McAvoy, or however the hell you pronounce it. But
Interesting story. My lawyer put that deal together.
Oh, okay.
Because he's on a bit of a roll, too, because he got the Painkiller Jane deal done at Sci-Fi.
Yeah.
And then he put together the Preacher deal, and then I called him the other day to talk about something, like right before the Angelina Jolie news broke, and the first words out of his mouth were, Angelina fucking Jolie. He was just thrilled. I probably shouldn't say that, you know, now he'll say, Steve, stop telling stories out of school. But it's exciting to see Wanted doing that. I mean, my gosh, what do we have coming up? We have Spider-Man, Fantastic Four, Rise of the Silver Surfer. You can say Transformers arguably fits into that same school.
Yeah.
You've got Stardust this year, and there's one more, and I'm drawing a blank.
Wow.
Oh, 30 Days of Night is also coming out this year.
Yeah.
What a great year for comics. And you've got Heroes on TV. So sooner or later, I really think the cumulative effect is we're going to show people what this medium has. And it's just wonderful.
It is a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing to finally find recognition for comics. But, you know, in something other than the book medium or the TV medium, it's great to finally find solace in that.
Well, yeah, and, you know, let's not get bummed out when we see the term based on a graphic novel by so-and-so. I love my local comic shop. I love all comic shops. But right now, let's just convert these people over. Let's get the civilians into the easiest store for them to navigate. Let's get into Borders first. So I'm just so excited to see how all of this is going.
Yeah, I'd definitely say Borders over Barnes & Noble, since Borders seems to have more comics than manga, as opposed to Barnes & Noble has more manga than comics.
Oh, don't even get me started on that.
That was a slip on my part. Borders, Barnes & Noble, Crown Books where you are, Crown, Walden, B. Dalton, if they're still around.
B. Dalton's still around, yeah. There's actually a B. Dalton right in King's Plaza here in Brooklyn.
And I think Target has the Marvel's Adventures floppies or something.
Oh, isn't that fantastic?
Yeah.
Those are doing really well there, I heard, too. I think it was like on the strength of like Target and stuff like that, that Jeff Parker's X-Men First Class is like an ongoing now because of the strong sales in Target. I thought I heard that somewhere.
Oh, wow. That's great news, actually, because I was meaning to pick that up in trade. So now I'll be happy to know that it's going to be continuing past that trade. So
Okay. I'm going to get off on another tangent.
Okay.
So
that's fine. Tangent number five.
I know. I'm really sorry for this, but
dude, honestly, you're giving us great podcasting right here. So go ahead.
Well, I get so tired of listening to people saying, "Well, you know, when I started reading, you could buy comics on a newsstand, and comics were accessible to kids, and all this other stuff." Right? Okay. Well, first of all,
there's a different time.
We can't do anything to get back to the newsstand. So let's stop bitching about it and utilize the resources that we have right now, like the internet and so forth. And who's to say that the newsstand wouldn't have abandoned comics anyway? Because, I mean, you're talking about stuff that changes over every week. If they had stayed on the newsstand, they would have had the lower price anyway. How profitable is that to rotate your stock when you got an issue of Playboy or Penthouse or whatever for $5 that doesn't change? I mean, these guys are going to go where the money is. So, you know, rotating comics in and out, how much does that help a newsstand, I guess, is my question. So maybe the newsstand was going to abandon us anyway. But with these digest books, I don't know, a $5 book that has four or five comics in it, that's a pretty reasonable buy for me, especially if it's at, you know, a Target or a Walmart or whatever when I'm, you know, shopping with my son. That's a perfect price. Why do we have to keep bitching about, well, things aren't the way they were when I discovered them? you know what? TV isn't the way that it was when I started watching it either, you know?
Yeah, you know, back when it was black and white. And...
Well, no, but I mean, commercial television. Well, look at how episodic television has changed since the advent of TV on DVD. You can have more sophisticated storylines. You don't have to just think about people aren't going to watch this every week. The fact that people will buy or rent Lost or, you know, Heroes or The Sopranos or whatever means that arc-driven stories work on television when 15, 20 years ago it was the anomaly. Now it's the norm.
Isn't that great to see, too? Yeah.
Well, yeah, all of our entertainment has changed. TV, radio, everything's becoming a little more wait for the trade. So, I mean, our entertainment has changed. It's become more specialized. Let's not bitch about the way things were and how they're not that way anymore, because none of our entertainment is that way. Let's just utilize what we have.
Hey, Ian?
Yeah.
Do you guys have newsstands in New York?
You know what? There are still some newsstands that actually do sell comics. There's newsstands everywhere. I mean, newsstands. I guess the translation for newsstands these days are little grocery stores that serve as newsstands. Also, that's what we have. Like next to our Subway, there'll be a newsstand that sells newspapers and all that, and then there'll be, you know, like an inside that sells drinks and that sort of thing, and there'll be magazines on the side. And there will still be a few of them that have the comics on the racks, but it's literally a few. And when they're on the racks, I guarantee you they'll be like 3 or 4 months behind.
Uh-huh.
And that's what we'll have around here. There used to be a lot more of them, and they're not anymore. But you know what?
But they're not on the sidewalk or anything?
They're not, no. Every now and then you'll find like maybe one or two. That's more a Manhattan thing. In Brooklyn, not so much. In Manhattan, you'll still find them, but you're sure as hell not going to find comics on the newsstand. On a regular, okay, like sidewalk newsstand, you're not going to find them, no.
Because when I went to Europe a couple years ago, we went to France and Spain, and in Rome they had newsstands in the middle of a plaza and stuff.
Uh-huh.
But it was just magazines and stuff, and they had the Playboys and all that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And that,
even over
that's
there, and then
yeah,
in Barcelona and stuff like that.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and
so I was just wondering if they actually existed over here.
Oh, yeah, no, they exist, but again, in smaller portions than they used to be, and you're not going to find comics there. But you know what? At this point, that's the way the cookie crumbles. You know, that's the way things go. If you want to get your spinner rack, there's still a spinner rack in Barnes & Noble, and there's still a spinner rack in Borders, that sort of thing. That's where you can find it. Or guess what? There's probably going to be a comic shop somewhere. Go there. It's as simple as
that.
You
know what? I never liked the spinner rack because you're trying to look at something and then some other dude's on the other side and spins it and then you can't look at it anymore.
I
prefer the
that
wall.
To be so, you know, this one time, no joke on this, I swear to God, this is an absolutely true story, okay? I was at the Walden Books in Kings Plaza here in Brooklyn, and there's a spinner rack, and I'm walking over to it just to look at it, and there's this one dude who's literally like running around in circles to catch up with the comics he's looking at. Because everybody's spinning it, so he's literally going along, like, hunched over, spinning along with the spinner rack. And I'm like, dude, you are a relic of your time. I mean, I never thought I'd see that in my lifetime. I've heard of it happening. But, my God, there it is in person. The true old-school fanboy at work. It's amazing, really.
It's disturbing.
It's a hell of a lot disturbing. I mean, come on. It's a hell of a lot easier to go to a freaking, you know, shelf and pick something up than, whee! Spin around with it. Oh, my God.
Yeah. I think my dog did that.
Chasing its tail?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Well, comic fans used to chase their tail, and the tail was comics.
But, I mean, seriously, though, don't you feel like we have a lot more options to...
No question. Yeah.
To introduce people to the medium, we just need to exploit them.
Exactly, yeah. Well, and I've always thought this, to go back to the movies for a second, I've always thought that there should be, when you go to a comic movie, there should be somebody right there handing out a free copy of a comic pertaining to that movie you're seeing. Okay? I don't care how much money that would cost. I guarantee you it would be cost-effective in the end with people picking up that comic because they got hooked on it.
I tried
no,
to do
I
my
agree.
Part at work. I worked at a summer camp over the summer, and I went through my comics and everything that I knew I wasn't going to read again. I pulled out, and I went to the local comic shop and bought a bunch of 25-cent comics that were age-appropriate.
Yeah.
Some Sonics, the old Namor stuff I thought was kind of age-appropriate. bunch of Transformers, and anytime the kids would be good in my group, or I'd say, you know, go get a comic, and they would eat that stuff up.
Yeah.
And then, unfortunately, I wasn't there the last day, but I still had a whole bunch left, and I asked my brother, I said, did you guys get rid of all the comics? And he said, yeah, we gave them one to each kid as they left the door.
That's great. That's
so,
really great.
You know, every kid, at least every boy walked out with a comic in their hand. Now, I don't know if it's going to help, but if I work there again this summer, I'm certainly going to do the same thing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's, like, the best stealth marketing in the world, you know, doing it virally. Well, I mean, viral marketing, that's brilliant, you know?
Yeah, and
I mean, one time this kid, I said, come get a comic, and I kind of sit there and make sure it only takes just one, but he couldn't decide whether he wanted the old Ninja Turtles, the Wolverine one, or the Batman, and I was like, you know, if you're going to be good again, you can have another choice. So he took the Wolverine one and sat back down and, you know, put it in his lunchbox and was reading it at lunchtime and stuff, and other kids were coming over and going, oh, look at that, look at that.
I told this story like ages ago on Comic Timing, so I'll tell it again because, again, this was like back in the David Price ages. So this was like back like episode like 6 or 7 I probably told this story. Actually, no, you know what? It was the Peter Rios episode the last time that I told this. But anyway.
Who's this Peter who?
Some dude on some other podcast. I don't know if you've really heard of him before. But when I worked at a camp, I worked at a sleepaway camp about 4 years back. And we, you know, I was having trouble bonding with the kids. I'd never been to a sleepaway camp before, okay? So I was the newbie. And they were all there. They were all well-established and all that. And I was breaking into their hierarchy, as it were. And I didn't really know how things went. However, about 2 weeks in, my girlfriend at the time and my parents sent me about a month's worth of weeklies that I had missed by being at the camp. And there they were. And right away, They started coming over to me like, what is that a comic? I'm like, yeah. They're like, oh, can I read it? Yeah, sure you can. Oh, can I read it? Yeah, sure you can. And there was this one kid who was kind of quiet, kind of nerdy, that I would guarantee you he's still reading comics today because of me introducing it into the bunk. And actually, when I left the camp that year, I actually gave him my copy of Superman Batman number 1. This is when you can tell that this was taking place. And literally, it just came out. Superman Batman number 1 and Fantastic Four was it 400 or 500
5 cent one
that's not it the chrome cover with Doom in the like in like the skin armor with Waringo and Wade. I think that was like 400 or I mean 500 or 525 or something like that, but I gave him you know, that one, the director's cut edition. And he left with a smile on his face like I would have never thought I'd see on this kid's face. And I bonded with them over comics. And that's the strength that comics can have, you know, if utilized properly with kids. And it's great to be able to see that on people.
No, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, I was just going to say, I've been trying, you know, not trying, but doing it with my son. He's 6, and he's starting to get a feel for it. But it's funny because certain things that he had no interest in, you know, I can tell that other kids at school are into comics because he had no interest in the X-Men cartoons whenever we'd be flipping through them on Saturday mornings.
Yeah.
And, we went to the shop this last Wednesday to pick up my book. They, you know, the owner makes buttons, and so they have a big thing of buttons in the front, and Chance, my son is Chance, he sees, you know, Wolverine. He's like, that's Wolverine! And I'm going, yeah, you've never had interest in X-Men, so I know there's other kids at school that are into comics, too. So I just think it's cool. I really think that we're going to find a way to market to the young readers and bring them in with digests and, you know, with Cartoon Network having Teen Titans with a healthy run and Justice League had a healthy run. We're going to get a healthy run out of the Legion. I mean, Ben 10 is brilliant comics, even though it's, you know, not really a comic. It's Style H for Hero reimagined by Joe Casey and Joe Kelly. That's pretty damn good in my book.
Sure, yeah. I mean, the fact that, and again, this is a good thing that these kids are catching on, because we had an entire episode once upon a time about how comics seem like they're starting to be for older people. Well, if we're getting the younger kids involved, then that's certainly a good sign that this thing will continue for years to come, because we need the younger generation involved in order for our, you know, in order for our love to thrive. It's simple as that, because we don't want it to die with one generation. We want this thing to continue for ages. So,
yeah, comics should be for kids. They should be for adults. They shouldn't be for either gender. You know, it's such a great medium. Let's do it for everybody.
Yeah. Amen to that, man. And, yeah, I mean, I think we've gone into about four different subjects today, all of which made for a fantastic episode. So
you've got break two, this up, you know.
It's going.
Yeah, we've got I think like an hour's worth of one episode and about an hour and a half of another, so we're good, man.
You'd be raging bullets type. You're gonna be like part three.
Oh man, well this is a two and a half hour episode, so I'm
just
gonna
call it a separate one.
Exactly, that will in general.
Are you sure you don't want to do this like once a quarter? It can be like your version of the Bendis tapes with somebody not as good like me.
Well, Steve, you know, man, whenever you want on, just send me the email and you're on, man. It's as simple as that because, I mean, you're an awesome guest to have on and a great guy to talk to in general. So, like I said, the invitation's there. So whenever you want to come on, you're well up for it. So
yeah, every Thursday, I'm here waiting for Ian to get on.
Yeah, well, see, that's because Brent lives at his computer desk. So
right, that's true.
Do you have to, like, catheter or do you have, like, a big 2-liter bottle there?
No.
Because I think either choice has got to be a little uncomfortable.
Yeah, how about that Kathy Lee Gifford? Yeah.
Oh, stop. No, I'd love to do it again. Because obviously I have this problem with, you know, being out so quiet.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, we had about 2.5 hours of absolute silence. So I don't know. However, whatever the hell I'm going to do with this episode, really, man. But.
Incidentally, I do need to point something out.
Yeah.
Calling me on my phone instead of using Skype was a good choice because in the studio, I've got my computer and my cable modem right here, and my cable modem went out twice during our conversation.
Nice.
So,
nice.
Yeah, I would have been lost otherwise.
Hey, well, like I said, we're using hardware as opposed to software to record now, so it wouldn't have gotten that a sync at least.
I'm a dumbass artist, so what you said really doesn't make much sense to me.
I'm using a separate recorder to record as opposed to the computer that I'm talking on right now.
I use the fuzzy end of the brush. That's the part that I put in the ink. My cat spit smells like cat food.
And the internet is a series of tubes.
I love that quote. Oh, ladies and gentlemen, that's our tax dollars at work, baby.
Oh, man. And that's literally brought up once an episode here, so I'm glad to mention it again. Oh, but, dude, you want to give the website for everybody before we head out?
Oh, mine?
Yeah.
Oh, sure. AthenaVoltaire.com. You know, with the HTTP and the www. Can we stop saying www and just switch to, like, 6U? If it's double U and we got three of them, let's just start a new trend and be 6U.
So you can find him at xxx.athenavoltaire.com.
Check out my cam. No.
It's worth it, I'll tell you.
Good Lord.
Yeah, but definitely, athenavoltaire.com. And if your comic shop is not getting in Athena Voltaire, tell them to get in Athena Voltaire. It's well worth it. So, in general, man, like I said, I'm enjoying it every step of the way. And, dude, just keep it up. And I'll be reading them and buying them. Not just reading them.
Thanks, man. And thanks for talking to me so long, guys. I appreciate it, both of you, for answering my dumb questions.
Hey, pleasure's all mine, man, because you answered ours, so.
Cool. Thank you guys so much. This has been a lot of fun, and thanks for putting up with me on the forums, too. I know I'm a grumpy old pissant.
But, don't worry about it.
At least I'm not as bad as Darren Goodhart, who I think is pissier than I am.
No,
but I like him. He's
reloaded.
A nice guy.
Foreigner Reloaded. That guy's always mad.
Foreigner Reloaded? You know, he had, like, all the problems with the German language.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the first thing I did was recruit him. He's my consultant.
Oh, dude, awesome. Nice.
Well, because he can't be mad, you know, so I'm actually going to have him check over when we do Flight of the Falcon as a trade. I mean, I'm going to have him clean up my German. Well, not my German, Paul's German.
Yeah.
I'll leave you guys with this story. My collaborator, who makes me seem like, you know, a youngster, and I'm not kidding, he was all proud when he was writing the German dialogue for the book because he said, I got out my Sergeant Furies and I'm you know, I've got that for my German quotes. Sergeant Fury from the 1960s is not a good example of Germans. And we got so many emails from people who didn't like the dialect stuff that was written out. So I'm going to clean that up, too. But, yeah, Paul.
Sergeant Fury. You seriously go to Sergeant Fury for your German. More power to you, man.
Yeah, well, he has written the next arc, but he got it to me in enough time that she's not on the CGS forums a whole lot anymore, but do you remember Take Backup?
Yeah, I remember, yeah.
Yeah, Molly, she is editing the next series for us.
Oh, cool, awesome.
So again, it's the whole power of those forums, because I met her because we both liked Arrested Development and Veronica Mars.
Oh, man. Well, dude, hey, come on. I've been on the forums since the rotating covers, so I remember most of the people who have been on there, so.
I don't remember what the forums looked like when I started. I got on originally when... I'm such a fucking narcissist. I got on originally when someone told me they had mentioned us for the Eisner nomination.
Oh, okay.
And then I got on when we were, I think it was like at the very beginning of the Indie Challenge.
Uh-huh. So that was like episode, like what, like 40, 50, something like that?
Something like that.
You've been mentioned in your book ever since I started listening.
Oh, my God.
Get rid of it.
I swear, I got to give Brian a kickback. And, well, at this point now, I've got to add Ian to the kickback list, and Niesman, and
hey,
Suntress, and everybody.
I'll gladly take a free trade, you know.
We'll talk at the next convention I'm at when I don't have to worry about UPS destroying my books.
Oh, dude.
You remember that?
Yeah, I remember
the
that.
New York thing?
I'm just glad I got one of the issues, that's all.
What can Brown do to you?
That's
their motto.
Hey, they're called Brown for a reason.
but if nothing else, now that New York will not conflict with MegaCon, maybe I'll meet you in the next, 11 months, Brent?
Hey, hopefully. I'm going to MegaCon after this year, so I'll definitely go the next year. Yeah.
And
if you're there, I'll definitely seek you out.
I'll be at San Diego this year, man. So,
as will I. Are you going to make the trek out to San Diego, Brent?
Unless you want to pay for it, I'm not going.
Okay,
same for $300.
My girlfriend went all out, so we're spending a crap of a lot, but at the same time, we're going to be in like heaven the entire con. We're like a one hotel away from the convention. So
wow,
yeah, we're good.
Yeah, we're going to be probably at the Hyatt because we weren't able to get into the Hyatt with with convention rates.
Yeah, yeah.
But two of the guys that I go there with have really good jobs, so they want to want to do that.
Yeah, and I'll probably also be at Baltimore if you're going to be there.
I won't be there, but I apparently I'm going to be at 300, so that'll be fun.
Oh, sweet, awesome. Well, I'll definitely see you there because we're taking a road trip. We're going to be out there all 3 days.
Yeah, I'm still trying to figure out all the. It's going to be neat.
It's going to be awesome, man. But and
okay, group hug. Group hug.
And Brent, as usual, thanks for joining me, man. And we've got our BK's Bullets joint thing coming up hopefully soon on Raging Bullets, right?
Hopefully.
Awesome.
Earlier, yeah, it was last week.
Anybody who likes hearing Brent and myself go off on tangents, that's a good one to listen to. So.
No, I listened to it. We were pretty on topic.
Okay.
I didn't have to edit too much, so we were pretty on topic.
Good, I'm glad.
You guys go off on tangents? Really?
I have that actually reminds me of a story. The email...
You must not have listened to Comic Time previously.
Oh, he has from time to time, I'm sure. So.
And I've participated in tangents, and we've mocked ourselves.
Yes, exactly. But
that's what Comic Time is all about.
RagingBullets.com for BK's Bullets and all that. And let's get to the end of the episode here. Let's do the credits right now, and I'll thank everybody at the end. The email address for Comic Timing is comictiming@gmail.com. Don't forget to check out those forums over at cgspodcast.com. They're back. Exactly. CGSpodcast.com/forum. Everybody except for Brent, he's left out. But the new forums are up and running. Everything is saved from the last time. Nothing got lost. You can just log on in. That's a brand spanking new forum on a brand spanking new server, and it looks fantastic. So go ahead and check that out. Graciously hosted by the Comic Geek Speak guys over at comicgeekspeak.com. We are proud members of the Comics Podcast Network over at comicspodcast.com. Please send us your iTunes reviews on iTunes. That would be graciously appreciated, and it helps spread the word about Comic Timing. Please vote for us on Podcast Alley. The links are in the show notes and on the Comic Timing forum. And please dig us on dig.com. That's on the Comic Timing forum as well. And a whole list of others are on there. And don't forget, Nova number 1 will be our 22 pages upcoming. So anybody who wants to partake in Nova number 1 conversation, go ahead and pick that up, and we'll discuss it here on the show. That's 22 pages, number 3, Nova number 1. Deep breath. So there we go. One more time. Brent, Steve, always a pleasure. Great talking to you guys and great conversation in the episode.
No problem.
Thanks for having us.
No problem. And as always, there's always time for comics. I mean, $3 an hour, that's like Kathy Lee Gifford shoe money.
What? Kathy Lee Gifford, she hasn't been in the spotlight in years.
Yes, that's why I'm throwing out the old reference, okay, for people who still remember that whole scandal.
Wait,
you don't remember the shoe scandal?
No.
The kids in, like, Zimbabwe that were making her shoes?
The only thing I remember about Kathy Lee Gifford is her big leaving Regis Bonanza or whatever.
Oh, okay.
That's it.
Well, at least Steve knows what I'm talking about. He left.
Yeah, I chuckled. I was trying to find some way of, you know, making a Kathy Lee Gifford as a dominatrix joke in there, but I wasn't fast enough.
So we're all kind of glad you didn't, though.
Yeah, but you've got that metal picture in your head now.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Try sleeping at night, pal.
Hey, it's not 2 a.m. yet, so the craziness hasn't started yet, but...
Yeah, we should start at 9 more often.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, we're much more coherent. As my voice starts to go ever so slightly. That's what happens when you talk for almost 2 hours.
Holy cow, we've been on for a while.
Yes, we have. Yes, we have. But that's okay. You're on your headset. You're doing your work. That's important. So.
Oh, as far as you know.
Oh,
I don't know. Brent, check the cam. Am I working?
I don't know. The head still looks the same as it was an hour ago.
I'm dozing.
Oh, shit. He's got the alias tricks going on. He's got that thing on loop.
Yeah, I'm actually out committing a crime. You guys are my alibi.
Okay, cool. That works. He was here the entire time, I swear.
You've heard me lament how sucky my day job is. And really, the whole thing, and this is not exaggeration, the whole thing, it gets me all fired up to get home to work on this silly ass career path that I really want to pursue.
Yeah.
Is listening to comic podcasts. I'm not kidding. So it's been invaluable to me.
This really makes
for a day job.
I work at a gun magazine in graphic design. I know nothing of guns. I like to lovingly refer to the magazine I work for as Second Amendment Circle Jerk.
Oh, man. Oh, that's beautiful. That's absolutely beautiful. Oh, but
that's my day job.
This just leads me to want to say what I did today, okay? I've been temping for the past couple of weeks, okay? So that's been my job. $15 an hour, I get paid to play a video game. Now, I'm locked in a room, okay? I'm locked in a room, literally, where I'm the only one in the room. It's locked because they can't let anybody else in to look at the preview. So inside the room, get ready for this, there's an Xbox 360 hooked up to a HD TV. While I was screenshotting, I was watching the extended cut of Superman.
And getting paid for it.
I am in heaven right now. And tomorrow I take screenshots and watch the Richard Donner cut and Donnie Darko. So, you know, things are good.
Wow. So, what the hell is your day job?
My day job is that.
Wow. I don't want to talk to you anymore. Brent, you're not going to talk to this bastard anymore, are you?
No.
We're done with you. We're starting our own podcast.
Yeah, we are.
Let me guess, it's going to be called the No Ian's Club. So you'll have one Ian on. That way, when I ask to be on, you'll say, no, it's a No Ian's Club. We're allowed one Ian.
Oh, I'm sorry, Ian. We would have, but, you know, the rule's the rule. We can't change it for you, you know.
It'll be the No E's except for Steve.